Hey, how you doing?
Not bad. How's it going?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Who the fuck are you?
A person of many, many faces.
Many faces?
Many. Chameleon of sorts.
Okay, what's your name?
Tash.
Hi, Tash.
Hi, Jace. How's it going?
I'm good. So why are you on the show?
You asked. I responded.
Yeah, cool. All right, fine. How do we know each other, Tash?
We met in 2012 in Parramatta, of all places.
In Parramatta.
And you had the most majestic dreads I've ever seen.
That was a phase.
It was.
People say it's not a phase. That was a phase.
It was indeed. I was a body piercer at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was courting somebody that you knew.
Oh, really?
Really, really.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Who did I know?
Also a body piercer. We worked in the same shop.
Oh, dear. Oh, well. So, what happened from there?
You were just getting your photography studio happening in Jamison Town.
Yeah, I would have been.
Not too long after that, you invited me and said other body piercer to an opening party that you were having.
Oh, God.
And her and I outdressed everybody there. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Elvira and the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what... I actually don't remember the order these things happened. Like opening the studio and then the other person. I don't remember which one was first, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, it's like, ooh.
Well, I'm assuming, considering I was inside that it would have been that sort of time frame that...
Yeah, it was around the same time.
It's all a blur to me anyway. Yeah, My memory is like a goldfish. My hair's the same color for a good reason.
Yep.
Back, and it's gone.
Basically, yeah, I remember meeting... You had the same piercing as me. We both had a third eye.
We did.
And that was really...
I think that made us connect a lot more, being like...
Yeah, that was one of those, like, that's not a common piercing that people have.
It's not.
And it's a really uncomfortable piercing that people have.
It's a very uncomfortable piercing to get taken out, I'll tell you that much.
I've had that piercing twice.
I've had
three. You had three at one time, didn't you?
Yeah.
But, no, so the first one was too low, and... it got caught on the camera every time I put the camera against my face.
Whoops.
And so I ripped out one of the side. one of the sides of the little shoe thing. So I was like, I can't.
Whoops.
I can't keep working and looking at people while my face won't stop bleeding.
Probably so not a great idea.
So I had to go and dig it out in the bathroom. And the second one I had to get taken out because it got infected because I kept smashing my camera into it. So. Yeah.
How high was your third one then?
The second one was a little bit higher.
Where was your third one though?
I only ever had it twice.
Because my issue was that my glasses used to knock.
Yeah, sunglasses the bottom were of it, a bitch.
Because you remember how big the disc was that I used to wear on mine.
Yeah, yours was huge.
It was giant. It was fantastic though.
But anyway, you had the same piercing and it was like, fuck, another weirdo.
And
like
we're both redheads.
Like a proper weirdo. I don't know if you had red hair, though. You might have had red synthetic dreads or something.
Yeah, probably not. I didn't live up to my red hair until I was later in my 20s.
Because I think we didn't really start taking photos together until after all of the nonsense.
Yeah. Well, the first photo you ever took of me was at that opening party, the Mad Hatter photos.
Yeah, really? Yeah. That was the first time? Okay, wow. So it was like... Yeah, then it was after.
Yeah.
It was after the nonsense.
And then it was much later that I think... I don't even know if I approached you or you approached me, but then it went on to us doing some crazy photo shoots together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to, get it in my head, the order of things. Yeah. I could have done some research.
No, I think both of our memories are about as good as each other.
Well, what happened is, with you and I, we became friends.
We did.
We didn't just shoot together a handful of times over the years.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, there's so much to sift through in the memory bank that it's not just...
Oh, there's a lot of luggage.
We'll just
slowly get through that.
It's not just photos.
It is not just photo shoots.
But anyway, so because the first shoot I remembered is when you had a shaved head fringe and dreadlock sideburns.
I remember the prerequisite to that shoot and you saying, if you ever shave your head, Tash,
maybe that's
you
what
have
it.
To let me shoot you.
That must have to. Yeah.
And you were so passionate about shooting me. And when I shaved my head, the first person I messaged was you.
Yeah, Matt. Okay. Awesome. It's not the first time I've gotten someone to shave their head for photos. But it was like, it was the coolest time. But then I know you've had that hair. No, maybe not. No, I'm remembering photos that look different, but were from the same day. Don't worry.
Yeah, there was a few different sets in that one photo shoot.
Yeah, but it was sort of that real goth alternative phase. And like sitting here now, it's like, it's still there.
She's
but
not
it's,
there anymore.
But it's not what it was.
It's definitely not what it was. It, like you said, it was a phase.
Yeah.
No, Mum, I swear it's not a phase. This is who I am. It's totally who I am. No, it's really not.
Why did that phase end?
I got to a point in my life where I felt like I should probably try and blend in. It didn't really work, but... less acutely outstanding,
yeah.
I guess.
Like, yeah, still fire hair and covered in tattoos, like, too late. But for me, it was effort.
I have noticed that as well, actually, because you remember how often I used to colour my hair.
Yeah.
I had every colour under the rainbow. Mm-hmm. Every 2 weeks, I'd colour my hair because the convenience of working in a hairdresser just allowed me to do that.
Yeah, that would have been true. You could kind of just... It was part of work, not part of life.
You could sit down on your lunch break and get your hair coloured.
Yeah, because what I found happened with me is the appearance was the appearance of a personality.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had one.
It's all a mask, a facade to show off to other people.
Yeah, that's it. I wasn't like who I was yet within myself, so I made it outside so people would see what I wanted them to...
It was all
this is how I want you to take me. Yeah.
And then I feel that. I definitely do.
But then, yeah, so like, God, 2012, so many years later.
Many.
Lots of, you know, personal development and giving much less of a fuck about anything led to I just can't be bothered to maintain, so now I shave my head.
yeah I have a half shaved head and I'm totally living the dream and I hate having hair, so you know, after the wedding it's totes going.
Yeah, cool. So you're getting married.
I am. Crazy.
We'll circle back because I kind of want to talk about getting married after we talk about some other stuff.
Okay, we've got to do all the in-between just luggage
kind of,
first we've got to
it's kind
baggage.
Of interesting. Marriage is interesting. But anyway, yeah, so you were married when we met.
I was.
That's right.
Yeah. I was 23.
Yeah.
And coming to the end of a marriage, actually.
Yeah.
Very young, silly girl wanting to get married at 21, and she did.
Yeah. Now I kind of remember the nonsense a little. I remember the direction it all went.
Sideways.
Because I was adjacent to the direction it went. I was involved with somebody who I think got involved with...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, it was an open thing and it all went very messy.
Yeah.
And it... Yeah, I look back at it now and I'm like, wow, I have grown so much since then.
That's
learned
really
so
cool.
much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You sort of got to burn a few people to... Figure out that you should stop burning people.
Yeah.
And get burned.
Fire's
don't get
not
me wrong.
Friendly.
I'm not saying that you or me did the burning sometimes. But you know what I mean. You got to kind of...
What flame?
You got to fuck up and get fucked over.
Yeah, of course. How do you learn without getting hurt?
So, yeah. So, you were married. The marriage ended. There was... So, I didn't know about the... Did you hear a fucking beep?
Yeah.
The weird...
Ominous noises in
like,
the background.
Sound coming out of the roof. Yeah, I was on the outskirts of... I was not with that person anymore, but...
Kinda, sorta.
Still
maybe-ish.
It was still happening, but I was completely unaware of anything else.
Well, you and I were both unaware of each other.
Yeah.
And it's funny that, like, we ended up,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Womb-mates.
Yeah, womb-mates. What's up, buddy?
If you're listening, I'm really sorry I said that about you. it was sort of awkward. And it was like, ooh. Anyway, like, it wasn't.
it's
like,
not
I,
now.
I think you told me, and I was like, oh, that explains a lot.
Yeah, and then you told me, and I was like, oh, yeah, no.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It all fits now.
Yeah, now
the puzzle
is
complete.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
You put it on for 39 hours.
We are going to be here for a really long time. I have set the timer.
Strap in, kids. We're here forever.
I have set the timer for nearly 2 days.
Best get that pizza coming.
It's all right. Well, we still know. I can keep an eye on the time. It's fine. So, outside of all that, so, were we shooting together before, during, or after, or all of it?
After.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
it was...
after. So, I went through some heavy shit with said person,
yeah.
And... dyed my hair purple. Don't ask why I remember this, but no, we shot before I was bald because we did the purple Mad Hatter shoot. Do you remember that?
Was that in the city though? Because that was after.
I don't know.
Anyway,
it's all jumbled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all mixed.
We're really good at remembering.
Yeah.
So,
take your vitamins, kids.
Yeah. So. We had a bit of personal history. We had a bit of external personal history where other
yeah.
people were involved unanimously.
Yeah.
But yeah, we still took photos and like...
Yeah, there was still quite a few photo shoots in there and we did some things with dead animals and we did some things with some rope and some crazy stuff and every piece of clothing I owned in my wardrobe.
So if there's a spectrum of like the stuff I've shot... Right, like, so down here is my dogs. If you've seen the photos of my dogs on Instagram, they're, like, these super adorable little things and whatever.
Aren't they just?
Tash is over there.
Down here.
Tash is the other end of that spectrum.
Somewhere.
As wholesome as you can be, this
Not
chirpy,
wholesome at all.
This chirpy little creature is... I have seen shit that I never really thought I would ever see. Like, it's that... When people find out you're a photographer and like, oh, do you take fucking... No,
make me look
do you,
pretty.
Do you ever take naked photos of girls? And I'm like, yeah, of course I do. It's part of the job.
Do you really?
And then... you pick. Let's not me pick. You pick. What do you think is the most left of center messed up thing we've shot?
Do we really want to go down that rabbit hole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know because your answer and my answer are probably different, and that's why I want to know.
Okay, so it's a hard, it's a place between a rock and hard place. Yeah, that because
yeah,
I can speak a good English.
Yeah.
Of going the route of dead animals and how many fan people wanted to do the same shoot afterwards. I've even still got people telling me they want to do that shoot,
mm-hmm.
and the. Extremely fetish shoot. / not gonna
yeah.
say porno.
Is it only porn if you sell it?
Maybe.
Because I never sold it.
I don't know, but there was a lot of fun stuff in that. There was a lot of rope and stuff, and there are some very pretty pictures that came out of it.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
So let's go with dead animals. Let's flesh that out, because currently people think... Yeah.
Yeah.
What animal?
So, we did a photo shoot. Oh, okay. The premise of this was, Hey, Jason, on the phone. Do you want to do a cool shoot? You're like, yeah.
Look, bro, I'm really busy. Like, it better be fucking cool.
How do you feel about shooting with, like, a dead octopus?
Like, am I just taking photos of the dead octopus?
And me. What
are you doing with...
Wearing it.
Are you wearing anything else?
Nah.
Yeah, cool. Let me cancel everything I have today.
Borderline hente.
And let's fucking see where this is going.
And then we spoke about how disgusting it would be. And
yeah.
I think that was the entirety of conversations we had before we actually did the shoot of how gross it was going to be.
Logistics.
And then I found out the most amazing fact of bathing seafood in milk and it getting rid of all of the slimy gross.
Yeah, so it's something to do with the amino acids in the milk. The proteins in the milk bond to the proteins of the slimy creature and pull it out.
And make it almost leathery.
And yeah, it was like clean. It felt like a clean thing. And whenever it would start to...
excrete itself.
Ink. You guys made me eep.
See, this is what I love, because like the premise here is we're gonna take off all of your clothes.
Yep.
And we're gonna like just slap an octopus on there.
Yep.
And see what happens. And the conversation is logistics. You know, like, how are we going to actually make this work? Because I run a studio, and some of the people who my clients might not have known I was doing things with octopi. And so the studio couldn't stink like fish.
Which is how I came across that very
interesting. Yeah, like, so how do we do this and not, like, rotten out the place? How do we not, like, throw up all over the... You know, what do we do to make it work?
What did we end up using? Like, random boxes and stuff and, like...
I think I just had a bucket with milk in it, and the octopus went in the bucket whenever the octopus wasn't on show.
Yeah. He was...
And I probably put drop sheets down or something. I had a lot of drop sheets.
He was dubbed Henry VIII, and he was beautiful. He did very well.
So, what was it like... Because this is something that I'd never get to find out. Because you can't... If you're taking a picture of somebody, and they're completely naked, and there's an octopus on them, and you're like, how does it feel?
Really good. No, it was actually really awkward. And because you had G'd me up so much about it being gross, and it was going to be so gross, but the photos were going to be amazing. We were so set that these photos were going to be boss. It was... A bit awkward having you and the other person present being like, put it in your mouth. Put the tentacle in your mouth. Tash, put the tentacle in your mouth. And I was like, no.
Suck it, bitch.
And you guys got me to put the tentacle in my mouth.
Suck the calamari.
And
who was there?
My partner at the time.
I have no recollection of this human being.
Oh, cool. That's all right. Neither do I. I don't want to.
Nothing.
Blank.
There wasn't even another person there, according to my memory.
That's
bank.
Cool. Anyway.
Yeah, cool.
You got me to put a tentacle in my mouth, and you can see from the photos how uncomfortable I was with it and how gross it was. And raw seafood is not a thing that goes in and around my mouth, but it did. But we did get some very cool photos out of it. And it did turn out to be lots of fun.
I'll definitely have to dig some up and put it alongside what we're saying, because...
Yeah, I think it would make it a little bit
contextually,
more sound.
Like, what I picture and what we took pictures of are two different things.
Really?
Yeah, like, I always know I'm going to do something and it'll work, but...
You always amaze me with your photography skills. It has
to
be said.
That's for off-camera.
But...
You can look,
but
flattery
what
will get you seconds, but off-camera.
What I received was much more... better than what I had anticipated.
The experience you had probably made you go like this, there might be one there that I don't hate.
There was one there that I didn't particularly like.
Oh,
that
sure
everybody chose as their favorite.
Yeah, always. That's the, if I take a photo and it's blurry, people will buy that photo and want the biggest print of it possible. And there'll be something about
get it to a point of pixelated and I'll buy it.
Something about that I like. And I'm like, yeah, it's fucking blurry.
Like, it's probably the worst one out of all these photos I've shown you, but I want that one.
So anyway, yeah, so octopus, and we couldn't even eat the fucking thing after. Like, we couldn't
We had to throw Henry in the bin. It was kind of sad.
There you go, yeah. So,
but do you remember going to the fish market and asking the woman from the fish market not to cut it up?
Do you want me to slice up the octopus? No.
Do you want me to clean it out? And I was like,
because
I don't eat seafood, so I don't know what cleaning it out means. I just thought that she was going to, like, you know, rinse it or something,
bring it
back. And then I was like, hang on, are you going to cut it up? She's like, yeah. No. We need it for photos.
We need it intact. She's going to wear it.
Like,
an
epaulette.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing. And that woman was so scared.
Oops. So, let's move on from hentai, because that's that story. But yeah, so we've shot that.
Rope?
Yeah.
Rope?
Yeah.
So there are some pretty amazing shibari artists in Sydney that I have come to know and love and have the pleasure of being tied by. We've done some pretty fantastic rope photos. Just, you know, doing floor work and stuff. But my absolute favorite part of rope is being suspended and feeling like I'm flying. So there's a lot of...
I need to interrupt you right there because I'm going to forget to come back to this. But recently, you did a different kind of suspension.
I did. A good friend of mine was very kind to do my very first hook suspension.
What's a hook suspension?
Hook is where they have big flesh hooks put into part of your body. So I had mine two through my shoulders. And then they basically put you on a rope and pulley system on the hooks. And your body is so strong, or your skin is so strong, that it holds you up by two hooks through this much skin. It's an amazing feeling. I've never sweated so much in my life. The adrenaline was absolutely insane. And I was only up for maybe a whole of 5 minutes, but it was a really, really cool experience. And I really hope to do it again.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's kind of that the cross between going into shock.
Oh, yeah.
And floating. Is that it's a really euphoric leaving the plane of existence thing.
Oh, yeah. I laid on the floor with the hooks in my back for maybe 15 minutes before I could actually move, just in an absolute ball of adrenaline. And I just couldn't get out of it to get the strength to get up and get it on the hooks and stuff.
So, was it pain or was it...
It wasn't. So, the initial needles being... the hooks being put in, mm-hmm, was much like a piercing where you feel the instant feeling, like, mm-hmm, the warmth and the heat, and then it kind of just subsides. And it's just fuzzy feeling.
Because that's what I was like, does the pain go?
Yeah.
Because that's every... like, I've had, like, upwards of 50 piercings, and the pain goes.
Yeah.
And it was that, like, I think I've, like, the 5 or 6 in one go, I've had, like, you know, eyebrows, etc.
Yeah, I've sat.
And it's like, bang, ow, bang, ow, but
yeah, the pain goes. Okay, it's gone. Yeah, yeah, cool, next one. This is, like, a piercing on a much bigger scale. And mm-hmm, the pain goes until you're put up on hooks to then be suspended from that.
Yeah.
The pain came back and... I had a few supports there, including my partner now, and I don't think I would have gotten off the floor without him.
Yeah.
And there was a point where they were all encouraging me to let go of him because I was off the ground, but I was holding on to him.
But you were grounded still.
I was a koala.
Yeah,
fierce koala. And at one point, I just dropped my weight, and it's amazing the transition of feeling between knowing that you're off the ground and actually feeling it. Like, the euphoric feeling was...
yeah.
Intense, crazy. But yeah, it's an experience that I always wanted to do because, you know, something about flying just excites me.
Yeah, so would you do it again?
Fuck yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. It's just that it's one of those, like, I've... jumped out of a plane. I've done skydiving, and I wouldn't do it again.
Oh, no, I would never skydive, and, which is funny.
Yeah, but it's not fear or anything. It's like, tick that box. I have no interest in doing that again.
Yeah,
like,
it's a bucket list thing. Like,
well, yeah, I can close my eyes and remember exactly what it looked like to jump out of the plane. I remember exactly what it felt like going down and the landing. And I feel like the second time, it would be like, yeah, I've done this before. For me. For other people, get the adrenaline rush. I didn't get any kind of rush. It was like, oh, I'm doing this. Oh, I didn't die. Cool.
I think with hooks, it's a little bit different because you can have different types of hooks. So, you can have them put on different areas of your body. You can be hung different ways. You can be hung with other people. You can be hung from, you know, upside down or in different, like, whether you're vertical or horizontal and stuff.
The physiological impact is unavoidable, though.
Mm.
So, like, the going into shock and, like, triggering your system to start reacting, you can't get away from that, so...
I think it's something that maybe I'll be able to deal with a lot better the second time around, because I have an expectation of what it is, what's coming.
Yeah.
But, we'll see, and hopefully I can be up for longer than 5 minutes this time and not pussy out.
Hopefully I can make it to the next one and get some pictures of it.
Yeah,
like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think I asked you to come to the
you
first
did,
one.
You did, but
I couldn't make it. Yeah, so there's very little photos of the first one, but I'm glad that there are at least a couple.
Yeah. So, circling back to other kinds of suspension. So, other I just kinds. Knew I would forget to come, but I'm like, I'm going to completely forget about the hook thing and not come back to it.
So, in Sydney, there is an, not an underground, but a side of life that not a lot of people are aware of in, you know, the square world that they live in, which is the kink scene.
Yeah, and I think people are aware of this stuff. But
not everybody. There are so many oblivious people.
Oh, yeah, look, there's... I work with a guy and was talking about... I used to work in a sex shop, and he didn't know what anal beads were called. He asked if people ever actually bought those things on the strings, and I was like, tampons?
Yeah, hygiene,
girls use those, bro.
Hygiene products?
Yeah, look, anyway, so... People are aware of this stuff, but I think it's a case of they don't think it's as big as it is.
How far down does that rabbit hole
Yeah, go? They think that like, oh yeah, some people like spank each other and...
Oh, it's so and, kinky. And,
yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think you were one of my pathways in to that scene.
I'm so glad that I could be.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't remember how I ended up there specifically. But I'm pretty sure you were one of the ways in. So anyway, yeah, so...
So, in this lovely world that exists, there are, fetish clubs, there are, dojos where you can learn to tie shibari and do rope suspensions and stuff like that, where you are completely bound in by rope and tied up, and whether it's on the floor for sensual rope or it's hardcore stuff and you're being flogged or you're being suspended from a point on the ceiling and... spun around at crazy, crazy speeds, and it's an unreal feeling. I've been tied by quite a few people, and I've done a lot of rope with a lot of different artists that do it very differently. Some people do Western rope, and some people do, you know, traditional rope where it's very, there's such a formation to it. It's not as organic as some of the Western rope. So I've been exposed to a lot of different styles of it. It's been a great experience, and I don't get to do it anywhere near as often as much as I'd like to now.
Yeah, it's that, it's kind of, for some people, it's an all or nothing lifestyle.
It very much is, and I was in up to my eyeballs for so long, and I think I just needed a rest, and now I'm finding it very hard to jump back in it.
Just too many other commitments. Obviously, if you're planning
being
a wedding,
an adult,
being an adult.
Being an adult. Yeah. It's gross.
And it's just time commitments.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Suddenly. And I think a big part of it is like when you're in the beginner phase of something, everything is new and everything is interesting. When you go past the beginner phase, all of the newness is no longer that enthralling. You want to do the experience now.
The shininess.
Yeah. So if you're away. If you're with people who are just messing around, you're like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of advanced beyond the messing around stages. So you kind of like, I just want to get in there and get it done. And those people also, other time constraints come up. They start tying someone new and...
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
Rope is something that most of the people that tie it is... an all lifestyle.
Yeah.
There is no nothing to it. It is an all-in lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And they create beautiful things from it. And I understand that it is very time-consuming. And they'd have every Sally, Sandra, and whoever else asking them to be tied up. Because mm-hmm. it is such a beautiful experience. And everybody should be a part of it.
But yeah. Like, on that, I don't tie. I can, but I don't claim that I do it at all. No. I haven't practiced proper techniques of any particular school. I can do pretty shit that has nothing to do with restraining somebody. I get asked to do it.
Yeah.
I don't have any photos of my stuff online at all anymore whatsoever. And I've never really sold it as something that I do. And I get asked.
Yeah. It's like,
so like it's that like people who like live the lifestyle would just get hammered.
Oh yeah. I can only say it from a few people that I've witnessed it from where they did get hammered all the time yeah. with people asking to be tied, like even random people they had never met in their lives on Instagram being like, I love your stuff, please tie me.
And it's mostly young, pretty girls.
Perfectly perky young girls.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's a hard life, right?
But it's this weird thing where like, what would you say your average rigger looks like?
Middle aged is what you'd call it. early...
If they're any good, they're usually middle-aged, because they've been doing it for 10 to 15 years.
That they've gone to Japan a few times, and they've met senseis from Japan, and they've done the hard yards to learn their art well.
In order to put the hours in, they're no longer 21.
So let's say 40-ish, give or take either way.
I think 100% of the riggers I know are bald.
Bald or balding or shaved head.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's just like 100% of the time they don't have hair.
A lot of the time, a lot of them are not in the greatest shape either.
I don't know.
It varies. So
I would say they look like middle-aged men. Yeah. They don't look stars.
They look like average middle-aged men. You saw them in the street, you wouldn't pick them for being anything super special.
They always wear fucked up shoes.
I haven't taken notice of that, but
riggers always wear combat boots, man. It doesn't matter where they come from.
Oh, I don't know. All right.
Not always, but I've seen a lot of it.
But they don't look anything out of the ordinary, not extraordinarily out of that
typically
box.
Out of the ordinary, but not also like if you picture like an 18 to 21 year old girl who's like, oh my god, I want an older man. That's not what you would typically picture.
I'm old enough to be your dad. I will totally tie you up. Let's go.
Yeah. And that's enough for these people.
But you know what? Going back to the kink scene side of things, that is such a big dynamic. It's such a common thing that there are these young, bratty little bitches that are happy to praise people hand and foot on the fact that they can tie.
Yep. And it's like this total devotion.
Oh, yeah.
That comes out of like... I'm saying this as a joke, but you're a Boy Scout who can tie some knots. You know what I mean? Like, it's a skill that, whilst it's a very heavily developed skill that they work on, we're not talking about, like, rocket science. We're not talking about people who are saving lives or anything.
Yeah. But
those people don't get this kind of worship. Not even close.
I guess the likening for me is something along the lines of those people that earn so much money, they have no idea what to do with it. They are in control of so much in their lives that they needed an escape. They go to those, you know, the femdoms that,
that humiliate
them, they degrade them, they treat them like a welcome mat, and that's the exact release that they need from life is to be someone else's bitch.
Yep.
I think it's very much the same with rope, is the fact that it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter where you've come from, where you learnt it, but the fact that you're good at your art and you can give me something that I can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
You give me that release.
Yep. Yeah, cool. So that kind of... I was going to ask, like, what's shibari to you? I think we just answered...
I can give you my exact reason because it follows that pattern.
Yeah. Because I want to ask a couple of things about the different terminologies you use, because some people know like this much and some people know like this much, and then some
and
people...
back to this side?
But some people know this much really well about rope work or about kink in general, or some people know about all this stuff, but
some like, people have
they've
no
never
idea.
Walked
like
the walk.
Said,
like, I would say like I have seen everything, but I haven't lived the life.
I don't believe that anybody could ever have seen everything in their life.
I've seen a hell of a lot.
I've been exposed
to so many things.
Oh, you poor darling.
I have flashbacks and I'm like, did that really happen? No, but what I'm saying is I've seen a lot, but I haven't lived it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that idea of I've seen hook suspensions, but I've never done that.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you what it looks like, but I
don't. There's a difference playing the game to sitting on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly right. So, what is shibari to you?
So, shibari is an art of tying a person or a thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a person, but quite often it is people being bound by rope in a... generally a sexual way. It doesn't always have to be, but you will find a lot of the time it is at least a sensual version of tying somebody up. To me, my pathway to rope was after finding out I had a very bad genetic joint disorder and not being able to control that pain, being tied up and being restrained painfully was something that I could control. It was something that I had the power to stop and to start whenever I wanted. So it's different to every person, but rope is just something that everybody should look up and experience and be a part of. And I can't explain it well enough because I'm not a rope artist. I am the person that they tie.
Yeah.
So like you, I can tie. Not well. Not by any means, but, you know, I know basics from being tied, and there's such a form to it that it's just something that you definitely should have a rope artist on here talking about, not me.
It's happening very soon.
Good.
But what's interesting for me, like, so in terms of learning, right?
Yep.
Most recently, I've taken up doing jiu-jitsu. And I learn moves by having them done to me, not by being shown them. Like, as soon as... If I'm watching on the sideline, I'm like, I have no idea what that guy just did.
I think it's kinesthetic learning.
Yeah, the second someone does it to me and I go, this is the feeling that I want to project into another human being. It's like, there it is.
I got it.
I now know what the feeling is. Now I can start learning this thing. I can start doing the movements. I can start going about getting to that feeling. But if I haven't experienced it, I have no idea what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah, if somebody's just sitting in front of you being like, no, you need to do this and this, you don't learn the same way.
Yeah, but it's always that, like, in class, it's this thing where, like, you're practicing with other people who are brand new, so they're not necessarily nailing it. So I'm like, I don't think this is working. And you'll ask the instructor and they'll show you and you go,
huh.
Right, that.
Yeah.
We weren't doing that. And so that's what I see with rope, because one of the big dynamics I haven't encountered is somebody who ties who also gets tied.
It is very uncommon.
Yeah.
It is, I think, something like saying a dominant person or a dominatrix or what have you is also a submissive. You would generally won't find someone who's both sides of the coin.
A real switch is rare.
It is very uncommon. Yeah. And even when you do find people that say they are switchers, which means that they would go from dominant to submissive and they would flex between the two, they will generally be prominently one more than the other.
Usually submissive.
Yeah.
In the kink scene, it's like I've probably met maybe four guys who I would say are actually properly dominant guys.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of people who play at it.
Oh, mate.
But...
So have I.
But I can alpha them out of the room and make them get upset by simply asking questions. Not even questioning what they're doing, but saying, why do you do it that way? And I can then take that... I'm not even trying to upset these guys.
No, it's not by intention, yeah.
There's like a conflict within themselves. I get all like really upset about it. It's like, dude, you just went beta against another dude who's a beta. You are not a dom. You know, like, because the real doms I've met, like...
They know it.
Nothing fucking bothers them.
They are sound. They are...
Yeah, it's whether it's healthy or not, nothing affects their psyche because they are their psyche.
Yeah, I think it takes a special type of person to be...
To go that far.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but what I'm getting at is, because you said people give you something that you can't get anywhere else. And so this is that weird thing where if somebody has that deeply embedded in them, that domination, they become this really attractive, powerful being that has nothing to do with their status, how much money they earn, where they live. It's this super powerful entity that could work in a convenience store and drive a beat up old car and live in an apartment with their mum.
Yep.
But like a couple of nights a week,
they're that
elsewhere.
Person. Yeah.
And it's like, that's a tangible experiential thing, because if somebody's like, oh, I'm rich and powerful, it's like, well, you might just be rich and your money is powerful.
Yeah.
But, and it's not, you know, if you're wealthy and you achieved wealth, awesome. And if that makes you happy, awesome.
Mm.
But that's kind of the formula, make money, successful life. But when you go outside of that formula and you can still have that like level of attainment, whether or not it's good, they've attained something.
Yeah, that it's symbolic that they have gotten to that point in their life where they can have not apprentices or anything like that, but have understudies that, you know, look up to them and want to be like them and get advice from them. And it's the same with rope artists. Like, you know, there are a lot of people that learn under them.
Yeah.
So they get to a certain point in this kink world where I guess they're looked up to. They have something that nobody else has, and that comes back to that.
So that's what, like, it's this weird, interesting sort of thing that this is where I then go to the other side of the argument where I think, like, why do they get that kind of, who cares? Like, who really cares? But people do. And people, and not people you think are so heavily attracted to it. So, anyway, let's move forward to, like, the actual events and stuff like that. So, at one point in your life, like, this was who you were.
It was.
It was what you were doing. It was what you were about.
Yep.
And so, you said the reason for it was a degenerative joint...
disorder?
Disorder, yes!
Was the reason that I was so heavily into rope.
Yeah. So, that sort of... were you, like, on your way down, like, an alternative kinky sort of path, and then that sort of all collided, or...?
I have always had odd relationships and always wanted something that didn't just involve one person, where mm-hmm. it would be an open thing or there would be multiple people in mm-hmm. the one relationship. It was obviously very amateur when I started dating. I was, mm-hmm. you know, 17. I didn't know what I was doing, but yep. it was something that I desired. And looking back at it now, I'm like, wow, I was an idiot. Yep.
Who isn't, though?
And then I was introduced to these clubs by a friend. And at first, it was somewhere where I could go and dress up and have lots of fun mm-hmm. watching all this weird and wonderful shit that I'd never seen before.
Sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah. Sitting on those sidelines back in the days of Hellfire. And it... the very first time I attended this kink club, I dressed up as Poison Ivy, because, you know, what's sexier than Poison Ivy?
Everybody's first kinky cosplay.
Right. How raunchy, Tash.
Yeah.
Was it because
you had red hair?
I can't remember. I don't think I wore...
You didn't even have red hair?
I had green hair at the time.
Oh, dude.
It was awesome. Anyway, I went into this club and they had performances, and the very first performance I watched at this club was a woman as the ringmaster or a puppeteer, and a guy with big gauge needles through his arms, suspension hooks in his back, a big rod through his cheeks being the puppet and had strings attached.
Yeah, cool.
So this woman was dragging this guy around the stage on puppet strings, and basically, the scene was that he was running away from her.
Yeah.
And she was getting upset that he wasn't playing to her game. So, she goes up and rips the needles out, and he's bleeding all over the floor and pulls this big rod out. And you're like, oh my gosh, what on earth have I come into?
Were you a body piercer at this point?
I was.
Okay, all right, cool.
But it was still horrifying.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. You do it and you're still like, yeah.
And then... like toward the end of the show, dragging him by these big flesh hooks, which I had not seen before, across the stage. It was an eye-opener, and, you know, it was something where I felt very out of place seeing the types of people that attended this club.
Mm-hmm.
So curious to know what their stories were, where they came from, how they found this place, and why mm-hmm. they all congregated together.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've come to learn a lot of. At that stage, it was more of a fascination and mm-hmm. a place to pretend that I was this, you know, very cool teenager and could dress up in these very cool outfits and stuff. And then seeing these people in like full body leather and being like, damn.
Quite often... The full body leathers that are more than my net worth. Some of this stuff is expensive.
Oh my goodness, the latex is just...
Yeah, if you can work leather, if you make collars, you will make a living.
Yeah, making collars if you can do leather work or anything like that.
Crazy.
Sell it.
As soon as it's kink associated, like, you can chuck on some zeros, man. Like, these people will want it and they will pay for it. If it's good, they will part with their money because they have to have it.
It is such a niche market to find.
Yeah.
So, there, you know, back when I was 17, there were very little places that you could go into and look at this stuff, you know. I never
Even
saw...
now, you go into any sex shop and there will be, like, but all of this garbage, and then there's usually, like, one little strip on the wall with, like, a couple of, like, different kinds of
kinky
bondage
items.
Things. There's been some nice stuff come out. Like, the silicone body restraints are amazing. They feel so good. It takes away the pain aspect. So, people who don't like handcuffs, because they're really uncomfortable.
Oh, it's hurting my wrist.
Yeah, the silicone ones feel nice. Like, it's just, like, it's just a little hug for your wrists. Like, it's really...
Yeah.
It's really comfortable. But you can also use lube on them to make them really slippery, which you can't do with a lot of other stuff. So
you usually
can actually make it really comfy. Yeah. So there's some cool stuff, but that's in the mainstream. But this stuff is not in sex shops. It's weird. Like, it's not there.
It, you know, thinking over the last 12 years, it has emerged a lot more since then.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I don't know if that's something that we've just been noticing more, diving further down that rabbit hole.
Yep.
Or... that it's come about because there's a bigger scene in Sydney now. Like, you can walk into... I don't actually know if Sax is there anymore, but Sax Fetish, and there was leather wall-to-wall, there was latex, there was ball gags, there was...
But this is a shop.
Harnesses. Yeah.
This is a shop dedicated to this stuff.
A shop specifically for fetish stuff.
So, it's this, again, it's a weird subset of something that's already not socially open. You know, a lot of people are embarrassed to go into a sex shop.
Oh, you see the teenagers that are, like, pushing their friends in the doorways and being like, oh, and laughing at stuff inside and being all very bashful looking at stuff.
Yeah. But then kink is, like, a whole other thing. You know, it's that idea... So, one of the, like, things that spins me out and, like, lots of my friends who are girls but not my girlfriends have met a new guy and he's really cute. Like, this is, like, when we're, like, 20, 21. He's, like, 20, 21. And then, because of my job, I've managed to hang on to friends in their early 20s because of photographing them. They happen to be the age that people model at. So, you hear these stories regularly as you grow. And they'll meet this, like, new friend. And they're like, and I just wanted him to spank me. And he was like... You know what I mean? Like, and... Then they were like, no, do it harder. And the dude's like, oh, nah. Choke me. Oh, nah.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that.
I don't want to do that.
Hit me. I can't do that to a girl.
Close fist. In the cheekbone.
I wasn't saying close fist, but all right.
Look.
Taking a little bit far here, Jason.
Anyway. But, again, you know, they can't find it. And they don't know that's what they're looking for either. They don't know about the kink world. They don't. But the thing is, so, like, I'll be talking to these people and, like, they've got no idea. They've seen my photos, but they are on the outside. So, they are unaware of the photos that don't make it online, you know. Like, one of the things I've always said, if you see a photographer's portfolio, any artist's portfolio, that is their best work.
That is the creme de la creme.
What they are showing you is the best they've ever done.
Yep.
I wouldn't say, like, most of my work, but there is a large portion of my work that no one will ever see because there's NDAs on it and it was shot privately and it was for people's own private collection at home. No one else will ever see this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where the kink world really was
thrives.
A big part of my income for a long time.
Yeah.
But I could still talk about the fact that it existed. And so, you would have this girl and she's like, oh, I just... meet a guy who will really go there. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I know people who will go there. And they're like,
oh, really?
No. They were like, no, I couldn't. No. And I'm like, 2 seconds ago, you were ready to get in an Uber and go there. But when you find out it exists, you recoil. You're like, oh, and it's scary and is unknown and it's out there. So, fine. But it's that weird thing where, like, it's that subset of, like, sex is okay, rough sex is okay, kinky sex, and until people are comfortable with it or even just aware of what it is, They're like, oh, no, mate. You know, it's that, like, the fluffy, the handcuff set that everyone gets. You know, the pink little piece of rope.
I never got
one, but yes, the pink handcuffs, like, the pink collar, like, whatever. There's, like, there's usually a pink ball gag, and it's, like, the size of a ping pong ball. It's like, what is this gagging? I could eat
this.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, everyone gets one of those, and that's, like, their hard limit there. And that, but it's not. They're just unaware
that anything
of what else
exists
is out there.
Because that's what's in sex toys.
But the thing is, so much of kink is not sexual.
Yeah.
It's lifestyle appropriate. It's, we don't want to conform. And it's a way of expressing that, that can be artistic, that can be really violent, that can be really playful.
Yeah.
It can be loving, it can be hate-filled.
It can be degrading.
Yeah.
It can be humiliating. It can be whatever flavor the person needs or wants.
And then if it's healthy.
Yes, of course.
At the other end. Because, like, you can get everything you need and then it can destroy you. But
yeah.
If you get everything you need and then it's a healthy, uplifting environment and experience and the right people.
And I think you often find these 21-year-olds you're talking about
yeah.
that do venture down this rabbit hole don't know what they're looking for
yeah,
at all.
It's that if you're just using somebody, you're not going to talk about aftercare.
No.
If you're just using somebody, you're not... And, like, this is one of those things where, like, when I grew up, the education was terrible. And it probably is still terrible about, like, what consent is and how to know if there's consent.
Oh, no, that you're exactly right. And I think that's very much a... It is still not something that is taught.
Well, it's kind of like eventually a girl will let you fuck her.
Yeah, like if I just push hard enough, she'll like let me...
Not necessarily push hard enough, but keep trying until I get the yes. You know what I mean? Until it happens. Not get the yes,
no,
but until,
no,
it, until
no,
it
yes.
happens. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, 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 no. There it is. There it is. I'm done. No, but more the idea of like ask.
Yeah.
Openly. Maybe not in public.
Discuss limits.
But yeah.
Yeah.
What works for you, what doesn't.
What do you enjoy? What
yeah.
do you want from this experience?
Well, just, you know, what are you comfortable with? What are you absolutely not comfortable with now? And that can change later. And if it does,
tell me.
Let me know.
Yeah. Communication is such a big part.
And I would say that doesn't exist in most relationships that I see.
No.
Most people I know, they haven't talked about sex with their partner. They will talk about the sex they have with their partner with other people.
Yeah.
Like, and you wouldn't believe
oh yeah.
the stories that I've had, girls who are friends, but not, tell me about their partners. I'm like, I'm going to sit across from this guy, and now I know how small his dick is.
Thank you
and
for that.
And how bad he is at using it.
And
I don't need to know that.
I don't want to know that.
But then, conversely, also knowing, like, the weird hang-ups that, like, people have that is ingrained in them for whatever reason it's happened. They are uncomfortable with something about themselves, and it's like...
Yeah, like, hearing about people that still fuck with lights off, and you're like, I... What on earth? There are some strange things out
there.
There's
some more light.
Let's put
more
light in there.
And if you're self-conscious, you're self-conscious. But one of the weird things about kink is it's when you see the people that are prominent in the kink scene that get the most out of it and contribute the most back... They're not these pretty little...
They're not models.
...things. They're people. They're real people.
They are.
Some of them are fat. Some of them aren't.
Some of them are tall. Some of them are short.
Some
they're
of the dudes
shapes
are
and sizes.
Jacked and they work out. Some of the other dudes are not.
Yeah.
They're young. They're old. They're regular, everyday people who have worked on their sexuality.
Yeah, and I think my favorite, my fondest memory of one of the kink clubs I attended in Marrickville was, I think this man would have been 80 plus in nothing but a chainmail loincloth, and he was walking through the club with a walking stick, like, supporting him.
Yeah, motherfucker, yeah. I'm just checking battery, 1 second. Yeah, we're good.
And it was... such an uplifting moment to know that
yeah.
there is someone that has devoted their life to still doing this sort of stuff.
Well, what I love, though, that dude's 80. He might have started 30 years ago.
Yeah.
At 50.
Yeah, but
or
that's
60.
Accepted. And
but you know what I mean? Like, it took him his whole life to get there, but he
yeah.
got there.
And it's such a strange thing. Like, people from all walks of life, all shapes and sizes, come to a community that should be such an open thing, that it's such an accepting thing. You know, there's... bis, gays, trans, non-binary, whatever they are now, and it's just accepted because it's a community where anything goes.
It's this... So, the best groups of people I've been in, those labels are left outside.
Yeah.
You come in here and we're all accepting of everyone, so we don't need to label ourselves anymore. And we can talk about who we are, not what we are.
Yeah.
And we can be who we are. Anyway, I want to get... We're being very philosophical. So, you entered the scene as a young little thing that was not really sure what was going on, and you saw a man get dragged around with hooks, and you were like, well, that's for me. How did you... What do you... Where do you... Because I got dragged into this kind of, like, sideways. For me, it was like, hey, this happens. Do you want to take a picture of it? And that's... I don't have
neat.
To... But it's, I don't commit to it, you know? Yeah. You said to me, I want to get naked and throw an octopus at my face. And I'm like, all right, I don't have to...
Do anything. I don't have to wear the octopus,
there.
Right?
So it was the same for me in the kink world, was I just ended up there.
Yep.
So, if you wanted to be a part of it, like, how did you, where did you, who did you, what did you do?
I spoke to people. I put myself out there and spoke to lots of people and found the little warrens that existed around Sydney where you could go to munches. And munches are where you meet... at a pub, all different kinky types of people meet at a pub in their vanilla clothing at a vanilla location that's safe for everybody to just sit down and meet people where you can just chat and find out what they do for work, who they are, what they exist as outside of the mask they wear inside the kink scene.
Realize the person and suddenly the gimp suit and the chainmail isn't so scary.
Yeah, like who's the little puppy boy that, you know, follows this woman around? Like, what does he do? Oh, he's a lawyer. Awesome, cool. Let's talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you get to see people in a much more real light, I guess.
Yeah.
In a fashion. So munches were something that I attended a lot of.
Yeah.
Different types of events, like, so Hellfire is a gateway for a lot of people into the kink scene, where it's the mainstream one that is advertised on social media.
I did it the wrong order. Like, I probably went to Hellfire for the first time, like, within the last 2 or 3 years.
Anyway, Jason's a bit special, if we haven't all realized. But being introduced to different types of kink events, that there is a site out there that is basically the fetish version of Facebook where you can meet these kinksters that do these crazy things and dress up in crazy ways and all this sort of stuff.
I really wish it was just called Fuck My Facebook.
Thank you.
I really wish there was a fetish website for socializing.
Called Fuck My
Facebook.
Copyrighted, guys. Just going to put that out there.
Started here.
FetLife.
You're talking about FetLife. Yeah.
And it has an events page where you can find events that are local to you. And there were all of these kink clubs that I had no idea existed that were so much more hardcore and so much more of the fleshy kink scene than what Hellfire is. Not that Hellfire is a bad place, but it is very much the face for the outsiders that don't know what the kink scene's like.
My experience with Hellfire was kind of like, this is a 90s movie version of a sex club.
Pretty much.
That you could put on TV at 6 p.m.
Yeah, and you know, you play some like anthems that you can kind of bounce to and stuff, and it's all a...
And it was fine, it was a nice night, but I was like, I was expecting the kink scene.
Yeah.
And apparently, I came in the back door to the kink scene, so when I saw that the normal entry point, it was like, this is 9 a.m. on a Saturday for me at work.
Yeah. But funnily enough, like, I went to Hellfire for a few years before I dug further into the rabbit hole, and it was only after entering that rabbit hole, going back to Hellfire and realizing that all of these big names that are known in the kink scene, these big rope artists, these people that do these hook suspensions, these crazy tattoo artists and stuff like that, like, not even people that are in the kink scene, all these big names attended Hellfire. Professional dominatrix, professional escorts, so there's all sorts of people that attend it, and it's, I think, something that is such a community-based thing.
Yeah. So it's still a good hub for everyone to come together when they have their face. They're still in their kink persona, but, like, they're not actively being it or whatever,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, you know, they're just, I guess, a bit more lax.
So, yeah, so you found it. So, how did the rope stuff start? How did that just happen? Because, like, it's kind of a weird, like, you know, I'm going to tie you up and we're going to have sexy time sort of thing.
I was never tied like that.
No, but you know what I mean? That sounds really amateurish and stupid, yeah. And it's probably how most people think it starts.
Yeah.
So, how did it happen?
So, I had started chatting to a particular dom that was a rigger as well, so he did rope. Mm-hmm. And he invited me to his farewell party because he was moving to Queensland. And it was at the rope dojo where everybody was taught rope. So mm-hmm. I attended this party, which was just, you know, a regular kink party. All sorts of crazy stuff was happening everywhere. And I watched him tie his partner at the time on the stage. And, you know, there was a group of people watching and stuff. And I'm very much a watcher. I'll sit back and I will watch things and watch scenes and watch the expressions on people's faces and how they react to certain mm-hmm. things, because that's just the person I am. I do it in Westfield. I watch people because mm-hmm. it's fascinating. So I sat and watched, and I was completely in awe of this amazing thing. I'd only ever seen a few times from a distance at Hellfire.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never got to see it up close and personal.
Yeah.
I approached him after that scene and asked if maybe he would tie me.
Mm-hmm.
And he obliged, and it was just some basic ties and a little bit of suspension to get the feel for it and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and I've never turned back.
So what, hang on, first time, a little bit of suspension?
A little bit.
Like, as in, you were suspended from a point, or did this a guy point. Just lift you up?
No, so I was...
So you were suspended from a point, first time in?
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy.
That was awesome.
I know, but it's pretty heavy. Like, a lot of people, like, don't get suspended for years.
I think it's... if you're, so say, you know, there's two people dating and you're learning to tie.
Oh, yeah, don't hang your partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not at the level to suspend me,
yeah,
obviously I'm not going to get suspended until you're ready. I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
But yeah.
When, you know, the first person you approach about it is a professional shibari artist, I was lucky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I was fortunate enough.
Because this is where a lot of people, probably in the younger brackets, dick around with this stuff rather than find someone who knows.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all want to start at the fun bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you need to know how to do this
And I think properly. A lot of it is people thinking they know how to do stuff, but you can hurt someone really badly if you don't.
So, I sort of look at it and go, okay, so there's obviously inherent risk, and both the person tying and being tied have to fully understand the risks that are involved and then do everything they can to mitigate those risks.
Yeah. So the first time I was tied, I had this dominant male who was very, very good at rope asking me all these questions and stuff, and I was just kind of standing there like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know the answers to it. I didn't understand why he was asking me all this stuff. And then after going up a few times, a little further down the track, I got a pinched nerve in my arm.
Yep.
After being tied, and it was horrendously painful.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was when I met another artist who came up and taught me all about the aftercare of rope and how to get rid of like that pain and everything like that. And it was just, it all kind of clicked into place as to why they ask you these questions before you go up. If you have any health concerns, if you have pain anywhere, or you like a specific way to be tied or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
and that they have the consent to tie you, that, you know, I'm not just saying I'm a dominant man, like, let me tie you up.
Yeah.
So safe, sane, and consensual is something that
It's this, we're about to enter a scene in which I'm going to dominate the fuck out of you.
I might flog you as well.
And before we do that,
please,
let's make sure that everybody knows, A, how to get out of the scene. If that has to happen.
Give me a safe
it
word.
It needs to happen.
Yeah.
So
when you watch Eurotrip and Flugenschema is the safe word, those things are actually real.
Yeah, but it's that idea of before the scene begins, it's not during, like, it can be, you can certainly, but people say you can't negotiate during scene. I'm like, you fucking,
absolutely must at times.
You have to have a starting point, though. You can't just go in and negotiate halfway
through. When you're photographing it, you have to be able to negotiate. Because there are some people who are like, you do not talk to me while I'm in scene. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm taking pictures.
I have to direct
the person too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, it was always like there had to be negotiation mid-scene.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's that establishing that stuff. You sort of watch beginners go into it, but not really realizing that what the conversation is separate to what they're about to do. They'll sort of have the conversation as they're starting to do the thing. It's like, nah, man. Like, make a coffee, talk about it, then gap. Have a gap, and then start your scene properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was sitting on the stage, and he was tying all of his ropes up from the last scene that he was doing, and he was just, like, sitting there and, like, sorting everything out, and we were just sitting there and then having a chat before we started and everything like that, and it was...
Yeah, perfect. So, that's a really organic way to start. Yeah. This isn't, like, a couple of people hanging out at home, figuring it out at a house party or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Not endangering anybody. We're in a safe place where there were a lot of people that tied and a lot of people that had so much experience tying.
Yeah, cool. Cool, cool. All right. Fuck.
Rabbit holes.
Yeah, man. Where are we? Where are we? Okay, so...
I'm at the point that I would like to go and pee.
Can I have 5 minutes? Because I just want to bring this to the end. Because I said I had to circle back to something.
All right, we're circling.
So, you do weird photo shoots. You do.
I do.
For no reason. Like, you don't, like, go out there and model and sell this shit or, like, model for companies or brands. This is just...
fun.
For personal gain. Enjoyment. Which is the only reason I do it now. So now I get why. Because I never got why people do this if they weren't getting paid. Anyway. Because they used to pay me. And I was like, okay.
Sick. That's why I'm doing it.
But so you do like this and you're part of this scene, right? And whether or not you're still super active, you're part of the scene. You've been there. You've lived that lifestyle. You've always been in relationships that are not necessarily just, you know... a man loves a woman, and then one day a child appears.
And the stork will bring him.
I just, you know, if you spend enough time together, there will be a child.
You'll figure out that some parts just fit together.
Yeah. No, so you're getting married.
I am.
How do those conversations work in relationships where, like, because the idea of, like, the Western... religious marriage ceremony of, like, you and me forever, ever, at the exclusion of everything else, including our happiness and sanity. How does marriage come up in that world?
It kind of didn't, really.
Yeah.
It's something that I kind of stepped... I guess part of the reason I stepped away from the scene a bit is because I'm... this is going to sound stupid now.
No.
Mainly monogamous with my partner.
Yeah.
And it is mainly him and I. And, you know, on the very rare occasion, we will have fun with a third person.
Yeah. There's a really amazing term. I don't know if you've ever heard of a guy named Dan Savage. He has a podcast that's really great about sexuality. He calls it monogamish.
There you go.
Yeah. it's like me and my partner are basically just me and my partner.
For the most part. 99% of the time.
Sometimes there's an urge or
something. We get a little bit raunchy.
And it becomes a little bit monogamish.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect term.
Yeah.
So, for the most part, I stepped away from a polyamorous lifestyle where I...
Was this a conscious decision?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, completely. And I...
Did you talk about it or was it just a thing?
No, I talked about it. And it was something, you know, after... divorcing my first husband and it being something that wasn't spoken about and there was no communication to coming to a point in my life where I needed honesty. I needed to be able to communicate with people. I didn't have time for these people that couldn't talk and couldn't communicate and couldn't get through the message they were trying to send.
Yeah, cool.
So, I'm very upfront, you know.
So you're sort of really hitting on the point that I'm most interested in. It's because what I've seen in a lot of people who label what they do, right? If you have to put a label on it, it's because you don't know what it is yet. Not in all things. You can label chemicals. You can label a dog as a breed of dog.
I hope that people label chemicals.
But when it comes to personal stuff, like if we have to label our relationship polyamorous,
Yeah.
Because we are amorously polygons, and we... Basically, I want to fuck other people, and I kind of need a way to make it sound like that's okay. You know, like,
I not sort all the of time. Want to be with you, yeah. But I really want to be with those people too.
But when they have to label it, I've seen a lot of like toxicity there.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can sort of lean on that whenever the other one of the partners has like an emotional distress to do with the situation. You go, well, we're polyamorous.
And it's so always the fallback. Yeah.
So what you're feeling is wrong. Or and isn't fair.
There is a lot of toxicity around those types of relationships. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I've been a part of a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And it's all a learning curve. And I will never stop learning. And I will always continue to grow from it. But it's something that I understand at least enough of now.
Yeah.
To, you know, realize it's not what I wanted. That's not who I am.
It's sort of this weird thing. Like, I think it's... definitely got to be a part of who you are, but you found something that works, and it's not necessarily saying that it's better or it's worse or it's right or it's wrong, but it works. And I'm going to assume the communication is there.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, so often the difference between cheating and, oh, okay, whatever, is communication.
Yeah. Like, hey, can I go kiss that person over there? Okay, can I watch?
Yeah.
Or I'm going to do it in the bathroom where you can't see me do it.
Yeah.
It's very much communication.
But it's this weird thing where, like, I think so many relationships are built around two people who ended up stuck together. And so many people don't realize that you kind of just end up with people in life. Like, there's a lot of people on the planet.
There is.
So the fact that you end up with anyone is kind of random.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're really the best option out of maybe three or four options. Endgame spoiler. Do I really end up with him? Well, it was either him or a tree.
I loved it. I died. Oh, I was like, man. Really?
Oh, man. It was so good. But that's kind of a really good point, is sometimes you've just got a bunch of shitty options and one okay one.
And I think... it's part of the way that people are brought up, you know? It's don't hurt people if it's not needed. And it's, okay, well, you know, I'll try and make it work, and I'm going to try and be good by this person. And then you end up cutting them worse than what you would have if you just left.
One of my weird values is I don't compromise fucking anything. And it's not to say that I can't reach compromise, but it's that I don't compromise my values or my needs.
No. And nobody should. And that's something I think...
Yeah. Mm. But it's this weird thing that, like, people are brought up to believe compromise is everything in a relationship.
Everybody has to compromise.
But what an adult can do is I'm not compromising my needs, but I'm aware that right now my partner is incapable of meeting those needs. And that's not an attack on me. That's not my partner maliciously getting... in my way in life.
No.
It was sort of this really big, like a huge moment when I realized that the words you use to describe personality types can actually completely change the way you look at them. So somebody who is messy or always, like, you know, has, they're unreliable, you know, they don't show up to things on time or whatever. You could describe this as a very fluid person who is quite malleable. They can go with the flow and adapt really well to change. And so you can say that somebody who's really reliable and really tidy is anal retentive and struggles to adapt to change. So you can say that these two people, you describe them with different words that mean the exact same things. And suddenly you can realize where the conflict is coming from. And you have the, you know, it's a scale. And if one person is super unreliable or fluid, and the other person is super anal retentive or reliable, you're going to have conflict there.
Yeah.
But if you can understand that conflict is due to your nature, not because you're out to get each other.
Yeah.
You can suddenly go, well, I know you're never going to meet my needs there. And then you go, oh, it doesn't matter now because I'm aware of it.
Yeah. We spoke about
it. Yeah, and if we can have that conversation where you're not meeting my needs, and the other person goes, well, I'm never fucking going to. And you go like,
oh, yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh. And then, like, there's this weird calm, and everything can be fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I don't have to... Like, for me, this was huge. Like, I don't have to be angry about this for a month. And this person isn't doing this to make me upset. You know, it was huge. So it kind of sounds like... Sorry, that was me fucking yakking. From what I heard about the first marriage, there was so much conflict and so much dishonesty. Yet, was it labeled polyamorous or was it...
Nope.
Was it an open relationship?
It was open.
But yeah, so there was a label in place that said this is an open relationship.
And there was a lot of lack of communication.
Yeah, was there any communication about what, where, when, how, who at all? Or was it kind of like it happens and
it skimmed over the
later?
Top of it. Yeah. And the reporting was a second thing. It was never the first.
One of the things that spun me out was involved in something and knew the person had a partner and I was completely unaware of their dynamic. And they were like, I just got to send a message real quick. Why? Because obviously we're going to do something. And, I don't want him to come home to that if it's not what he's expecting. And, oh, but it's okay. I'm like, I've got no idea what's going on. You know, I was young. I'm like, I got no idea what's going on.
I'm so lost.
But the response was, yeah, cool, send pics. And that response infuriated this other person. And they're like, why doesn't this other person care? You know, there's no, like, I haven't communicated beforehand that it's going to happen. Like, you know, I haven't followed the rules of making these things work properly. And they just didn't give a shit. And, like, that was almost more infuriating than getting what they wanted.
Yeah.
Was not getting the partner they had to fulfill any of their needs. And
yeah.
Yeah, so it's just such a weird, interesting dynamic.
Oh, we could talk for the 38 hours you have your thing set about it. My bladder calls me.
All right, we'll call it there.
Call it quits.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the wedding, and I'm pretty sure I'm taking pictures of it.
Pretty sure you are.
yeah, cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Everyone hits the microphone.